Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first edition of the MMA Torchcast. I am Sean Ennis here with Mike Jarslick. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Not bad. How's it going?
It's not going too bad here either. So you took a beating in jiu-jitsu today, right?
Yeah, quite a beating. I was outweighed by 20 pounds, but made a few mistakes I shouldn't have, so gives me a lot to work on this weekend.
Yeah, well, that's good. Mike's out there training in jiu-jitsu under tell us who you're training under again, Mike.
I'm training under Sonny Achille at Steel City Martial Arts in Pittsburgh.
Right.
Sonny is affiliated with Pedro Sauer, who Pedro is one of Hickson Gracie's highest-ranking black belts.
Excellent. So to sum up, Mike knows this stuff. I am merely a viewer. He has actually done the things that we are seeing in the mixed martial arts world. It's kind of been a slow news week, a slow couple of weeks, actually, as it comes to news, relatively speaking, anyway. But there's some interesting stuff going on. We're just going to jump right into it here. We've got De La Hoya Mayweather coming up on Saturday. Now, have you followed boxing at all? Are you a big boxing fan, or is this kind of just kind of seeing the big fights coming up?
I followed boxing back when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
Back when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson,
sure.
And then Holyfield took the championship, and we had Michael Moore, who's a local guy to Pittsburgh, winning the championship off of Evander Holyfield. And I was into it during that era, and kind of lost touch with it.
Yeah, I'm about the same way. I remember, obviously we all remember Mike Tyson in the 80s, and then I remember watching George Foreman actually beat Michael Moore on HBO back when I had HBO when I was a kid. But, yeah, other than that, I know who De La Hoya is. I've seen a couple of his fights, but, I've kind of lost touch with it as well.
Yeah,
but,
I'll still get the big fights on pay-per-view. It's not something that I'm watching boxing every week on ESPN,
right.
Or, even watching, I've been missing Boxing After Dark on HBO this year.
Yeah, yeah. So now you have seen, I've heard of what's it called, the Mayweather De La Hoya 24/7, is that on HBO?
Yeah, they've been showing them on Sunday nights, and I got the last episode. I guess it's going to be TiVoing for me sometime tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't have HBO. I haven't seen any of the episodes, but I've heard, I've heard a lot of things about it, which is kind of unusual. You don't hear a whole lot about boxing unless you got these big fights coming up, and they really seem to be doing a good job of hyping this.
Yeah, it's probably the best promotion I've ever seen for a sporting event. It's great stuff. I look forward to it every week. When Sopranos gets over, it's. I got a half hour to wait until the De La Hoya Mayweather stuff comes on.
So what kind of things are they doing on the show?
What they're basically doing is taking you through not really the training regimens. They show them training. Okay. Mayweather won't let the cameras in during any sparring sessions.
Huh.
Okay. They showed, some clips of De La Hoya sparring with Shane Mosley. And it's just basically background into both fighters, background into their trainers, and background into their families. And it's really good stuff.
Interesting. So coming with this 24/7, with this big coverage of this big fight coming up, we've been hearing more from mainly I think the boxing writers, or at least the sports writers that. That still have a love for boxing, kind of trash in MMA.
Yeah, there has been quite a lot of that lately.
Yeah, and you mentioned one of them on your blog today, this Mike Freeman from CBS Sportsline. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that?
Mike Freeman wrote an article for CBS Sportsline basically claiming the UFC and mixed martial arts is basically – appeals to the lowest common denominator of human existence. He said that it's basically two guys going out there and trying to kick each other in the nuts.
Yeah.
And it's a very poorly researched article, and just reading it was like, why does this guy have a job?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because, I've seen MMA coverage on CBS Sportsline, And
yes, and most of it is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. They've linked, you know, the UFC website has linked to them, you know, a couple of times. And there's, you know, there's usually pretty good articles there. And then you got this guy on the same website, you know, that's coming with this article out of 1993. And I think he even used the phrase human cockfighting.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah. Which is just, it just kind of blows your mind, you know, to still have these people around that think this way.
It's amazing. Looking into Mike Freeman's past, and I mentioned this in the blog, he's the worst type of reporter you can get because he should have no credibility with the readers.
Yeah.
He is basically a guy that worked for the New York Times from, I believe, 1992 to 2003. He was really famous for breaking the story about Maurice Claret and getting preferential treatment from the professors at Ohio State University.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever Ohio State looked into that, they found that there was no proof of any wrongdoing on Claret's part or the professor's part.
Yeah.
A little less than a year later, okay, at the beginning of 2004, Freeman got a job with the Indianapolis Star, and he was gone about 2 weeks later, and the reason for it was academic fraud. He lied on his job application that he was a graduate of the University of Delaware, which he did attend for 4 years, but he had never graduated.
Yeah.
So yeah. He ends up at CBS Sportsline, and it's obvious that he hasn't learned from the last experience.
Yeah, and it's interesting that kind of guy can get a mainstream job, you know, writing for a website like Sportsline, especially when they have message boards there, where he's going to get called out on it all the time when he says something people don't like.
Exactly. Reading some of the stuff on the message boards last night, it was there were a lot of boxing fans that were sticking up for him. What I think this guy was doing is what we see in radio with the shock jocks, that they'll just say a few things to raise people's ire and, you know, just to get a raise out of some people to write something shocking.
Yeah, yeah, really. And you know, if there's one group of fans that you can ruffle the feathers, it's MMA fans.
Definitely.
We're a sensitive group, you could say.
Yeah, there's a lot of passion in MMA fans, and
yeah.
The reason for it is it's a niche sport.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's the kind of, to me, it's the kind of pure sport that boxing claims to be.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, and even, you know, you've got these guys like Mike Freeman, who are easily, you know, debunked with their credentials alone, but then you've got guys like Mike Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser on PTI yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, did you happen to catch that episode?
I didn't catch the episode. I've read about it.
Yeah.
And my opinion on Kornheiser and Wilbon and pretty much anyone at ESPN is they really try to stay in the mainstream.
Yeah, yeah.
And anything outside the mainstream is something that they don't want to touch, don't want anything to do with, and they'll criticize it.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I think it was Kornheiser that was talking about how that kind of thing happens on barges, you know.
Yeah.
And talking about how, oh, that's bare knuckle. That's these guys that could go into boxing or go into the mixed martial arts, and they all call it UFC.
Yeah.
And talk about how it's bare knuckle and barbaric, and it's just surprising. I mean, it's not all that surprising on a mainstream outlet like ESPN to not want to stick their neck out there, but you know, it's still surprising to get that kind of uninformed opinion from guys that cover sports for a living.
Yeah, and ESPN does the same thing with other sports that some people consider mainstream. Okay,
right.
You very rarely see hockey highlights on ESPN.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's mostly what they like to focus on are the big names in baseball, football, and basketball.
Yep. Yeah, and now have you heard anything about the rumored deal that the UFC has coming up with ESPN?
I did not hear of a rumor deal with ESPN. What I do know is they are going to be showing highlights, and they have for the last two shows of main event.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, I remember seeing the St. Pierre Serra fight on SportsCenter, and also Krokop Gonzaga. And I've heard, you know, you got to take what Dana White says with a grain of salt, of course. But, you know, I've heard him talk about how they're going to strike a deal up with ESPN and they'll be showing UFC content. Now, whether he meant SportsCenter or whether he meant live events, you know, I guess remains to be seen. But I think they'll probably be a real coup for the UFC to actually get a little bit of credibility outside of Spike TV, because honestly, you know, Spike TV is great and it's good for the exposure, but the channel, you know, the network itself has a reputation also as kind of that, it's got that outsider kind of feel to it, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a niche channel.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, and Wade Keller brought this up, but with the HBO deal, kind of lending credibility to the UFC.
I definitely think that will lend credibility, and I think the thing that will lend credibility to it is the announcing situation that was the holdup in the deal to begin with.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree completely. You know, I think, honestly, I think Joe Rogan would be a pretty good color commentator, even if he wasn't employed by the UFC. You know, it seems like he holds back every now and then while Goldberg kind of shills for the company.
Yeah, Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg are both very good in my opinion. Okay, the thing that makes it different is they are employed by the company. Okay, it's not like an unbiased source. Okay, covering a fight.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's I kind of wonder who they're going to get to call the fights on HBO. And I've heard about Max Kellerman being a candidate, which I think he would do a real good job.
Yeah.
Because I know Kellerman, he's a boxing guy, but he's also, you know, he's also one of the few educated guys about MMA.
Yeah, Max Kellerman would be really good, and even though he's not an MMA fan, I've always been a fan of Jim Lampley. He always seems to do a really good job and does well for himself out there, and it's something that I watch Lampley call boxing matches, and I think he could handle it.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Lampley might be a little bit old time for the UFC. I mean, at least how he comes across in the boxing, you know, he seems like one of those traditionalist guys that isn't ready to kind of embrace anything that dampens the purity of his sport or what have you.
And he may turn out to be that way, but, you know, I've always thought pretty highly of him, and, you know, I just think, hey, if they're going to have someone on there for play-by-play, I think Lampley would be the man.
Yeah, now I do agree that if he were to accept the sport, that he would be a good play-by-play guy because he is very good at boxing calling a boxing match. But I think it kind of remains to be seen whether he'll actually want to, you know, whether he'll actually take it seriously enough to consider doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now to me, the next step, and what's really killed boxing, it seems to me, is the lack of accessibility. At least over the last, you know, 20 years or so, when you used to have fights on free TV, you know, on network TV before the era of HBO and pay-per-view. And it seems to me that the lack of accessibility to boxing has kind of been, really led to the downfall of boxing, you know, their lack of stars and their, you know, you've got De La Hoya, you've got Mayweather, but, you know, who else is fighting right now?
Yeah, there isn't much out there right now. Nikolai Valuev, until his recent defeat, was a decent draw, mostly due to his size.
Yeah, this is a seven foot guy, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like your semi Schlitt of boxing.
Yes, he's one of the taller guys out there.
Yeah.
And he has a unique look.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure. And where I'm going with that is I think the next step for UFC or for some MMA organization is to get on network TV, you know, be it NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, whatever, you know, whoever would have them. And, you know, the IFL is on my network TV, which is great, you know, for them because it's very accessible, but it's still kind of, you know, it's almost like it's not quite as prestigious as being on the CW, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I didn't even know what my network TV was until now.
Yeah, basically what it is, it's when the WB and the UPN combined into the CW that left up these affiliates, you know, in each market that were either carrying the UWB or UPN before, and now we're kind of empty, you know, didn't have anything to do. And they all kind of adopted this My Network TV thing, which is, I don't think a real good name for a network, honestly, but, you know, they're accessible, and IFL is on there. Now, have you seen any of the IFL Battleground shows?
I watched the first show, and then I'm a big fan of Groundwork.
Yeah.
And I did not like them cutting out the Groundwork, so
yeah.
I watch the IFL on Fox Sports.
Yeah, yeah. I actually don't get Fox Sports here with DirecTV because they want you to pay extra for it. But the first episode of Battleground, I can tell you, was horrible compared to the rest of them. You know, of course, they were selling the big finish at the end where the guy gets taken away in an ambulance, which is like the opposite of what we want to see on an MMA show. But they've actually gotten better about that, about not editing the fights. You know, they'll show highlights, but they'll actually acknowledge that they're highlights rather than trying to say, oh, we're going to show 15 fights tonight, and then they show, you know, edited clips with, as you say, very little groundwork and what have you. So now, did you see the they taped the show not too long ago and aired it the same day. Is that right?
Yes.
Did you happen to catch that one?
I caught part of it.
How did it seem to come off to you?
I thought it came off really well.
Yeah?
Yeah, the Fox Sports stuff on IFL is great. They show the full fights, and sometimes they have to cut out one fight due to time constraints, but they do a really good job with the show.
Yeah. Now, what's your feelings on the IFL in general, on the kind of things that they're doing? Are they making strides in the market? Are they kind of treading water? Or do they have any kind of potential with this team concept? What do you think?
I like the team concept a lot. I would like to see the team concept modified a little bit, though, and that you say that you get maybe 2 points for a split decision, 3 points for a unanimous decision, 6 points for a submission or a TKO win.
Sure.
Which I think if you went back to sort of like the amateur wrestling scoring system, there would be a lot more excitement in the fights, especially when a team gets up 3-0 immediately.
Yeah, 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 exactly. That kind of was the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, what happens when you get a team that goes up 3-0? You know, obviously a fighter is going to be motivated to win regardless, but it kind of takes a little bit of the punch out of the fight, you know, for at least the viewer.
Yeah, for the viewer it does. Okay, I don't think it does for the fighter.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I agree.
The reason for that is I don't think it does for the team either. Because any win is counted in the standings,
yeah,
and those will count towards making the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm not real, you know, like I said, I don't get Fox Sports, so I'm not real familiar with the concept, or not with the concept, but with the how they go about determining the champion. Because on Battleground, what they'll do is they'll show, you know, a say Razor Claws versus Lions match, and or, you know, the meet, or however they call it, and you'll see who wins, but you don't really know what happens, you know, what happened before or after. You know, okay, well, now where do the Razor Claws stand? Well, I don't know. You know, they kind of show the fights, but they kind of leave it at that. And
the Fox Sports show does a lot better than that, but I think they have a little bit too much expectation on actually going to the website and looking at the standings.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're making the viewers work, it's not it never works in your favor.
Yeah, it'll work for some sports. People love looking at baseball stats, but I doubt people, you know, really enjoy looking at IFL stats.
Yeah, it's, you know, fight fans want to see fights.
Exactly.
And they want to know, you know, they want to know what each fight means, you know, what's at stake each time these guys step into the ring, and you know, I think that's something they can improve on. And I'll tell you this. I think the team concept is good in principle, but I think they also need champions, like individual champions. And maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would help if they did have champions. It would take away from the team concept just a little.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, is how do you do that and keep the team concept?
Yeah, and unless they want to go with the with the legends that they are throwing out there every couple shows, such as a Jeremy Horn or a Marco Hulas, I believe he lost his fighting Maurice Smith in Chicago on May the 19th.
Yeah, yeah. And they fought at UFC 21, Kuwas and Smith, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Where I didn't see exactly what happened in that fight. I believe it was I know Smith won when Kuwas couldn't continue anymore. That he had like a leg injury or something like that, right?
Yeah, he had a leg injury coming into the fight. So you know, there's still some question on who's the better fighter between the two.
Sure. So they'll get that going. They, you know, they have put on some intriguing fights. You know, even between the legends, they had Carlos Newton and Matt Lindland and Henzo Gracie and who did Gracie fight?
Pat Miletich.
Miletich, yeah, yeah. Some real intriguing fights, actually.
Yeah, the Gracie Miletich fight was interesting.
Yeah.
Also, Gracie against Carlos Newton. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been working on tracking that one down.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either. I did see Gracie Miletich. And I guess Pat went in there, came in with a neck injury, and then got caught in the guillotine, which is never good.
Yeah.
for a neck injury. But.
Yeah, he came in, put his head down. Gracie got the guillotine and sort of pulled guard.
Yeah.
Wasn't able to get him down to the ground, but they were up against the ropes, so he had enough leverage to put that on pretty hard.
Yeah. Good. Well, let's look at the big news, at least this year. Being the Pride UFC, or the UFC's buyout of Pride, or Zuffa's buyout of Pride, or however you want to put it. What's your take on that?
It wasn't very surprising to me.
Yeah.
Okay. It was shocking when I first read the news, just because it was such big news.
Yeah.
Okay, but going into the year, it was something that I could definitely picture happening.
Yeah. So you think it's a good thing overall, bad thing?
I definitely think it's a good thing overall. And
yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it sounds bad to say it, but I really think the fewer people that you have controlling what goes on in the sport on the top, the better.
Exactly.
You know, because that's how you're going to get your big fights.
Yeah, the other thing is it also takes question away whenever they make common rules. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
A few years ago, there was a rumored Randy Couture, Wanderlei Silva fight. Everyone was arguing at the time that, well, if they fight in the cage, that's Couture's fight. If they fight in the ring, it's Silva's fight. If you're allowed kicks on the ground, it's Silva's fight. And there shouldn't be that type of questions being brought to the forefront when two great guys are going to be fighting.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just like Liddell Silva. It probably wouldn't have been quite as big a question because they're so, you know, at least a little bit more similar in style. Silva probably uses more a more diverse striking attack than Liddell does. But, you know, still, you've still got that question.
Exactly. It's hopefully UFC will look at that and, you know, decide, hey, this is where we want to have the fight.
Yeah.
These are what the rules are going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they are going to go with the unified rules, but they're going to keep Pride in the ring and keep the UFC in a cage. And I think that's due to the fact that they want to keep it kind of a Japanese-centric product, which is kind of a double-edged sword because they're not going to have those big freak show fights. You know, Giant Silva will be out of a job in Pride. You know, and those kind of guys, they're not going to have the big mismatches. So that I think that kind of takes away some of the allure for the Japanese fans because that's kind of what they wanted to see. They wanted to see, you know, Minowa taking on guys like Semi Schlitt.
Yeah, it's a big thing in Japan to see the Giants fight. And,
yeah. And see the little guys.
They like their big stages. They like the fireworks. And,
yep.
And that's what made Pride great. And,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's something to be said for all that. Now, it'll be interesting to see what they do. As far as I know, they are keeping the same production team in place as far as the, you know, the big production and the stages and the ramps and Takata banging on the drums and all that. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, starting with this next Grand Prix, how it looks, you know?
Yeah. Well, at least hopefully they'll take the thong away.
Yeah, I could deal with the subtraction of the thong, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I get that that's Japanese and everything, but they could at least not show it on camera. Leave it for the live audience if they're going to leave it in there, you know?
Yeah.
So as far as unified rules go, you're making the rules. You keep elbows in, you put knees on the ground in, soccer kicks, what are you doing?
I would stay away from the soccer kicks.
Yeah.
It's something that just doesn't look good to a mainstream audience.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, to me, even that aside, it's a soccer kick to the head, you could do some serious damage, you know,
yeah.
to a guy. And, you know, we've all seen fighters, a guy is clearly knocked out, and he falls into the ground and delivers a few more shots, and it could be the same thing with a soccer kick. You know, you knock a guy out, he hits the floor, and you throw a soccer kick to the head, this guy's got no defense, and, I mean, you know, that's trouble.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The other rule that I never liked in the unified rules was elbows.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is twofold. Basically, elbows on the ground allow one fighter to stay real close to another fighter and not create the space he needs to set up a sweep and get a reversal.
Yep.
So they actually make for more boring fights.
Yeah, yeah, you got the... those short elbows that Jeremy Horn uses a lot, you know, they push off just far enough and then, you know, just lean back down on them and you got an elbow.
Yeah. If you're throwing punches on the ground, you actually have to posture up in order to throw a punch.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot harder.
Yeah. It's definitely the elbows that we were seeing from Gabriel Gonzaga that he was throwing on Crocopper, I think are the exception to the rule, where he's landing these elbows to the jaw, you know. I mean, he did land a couple that cut him on his forehead. But you don't really see a lot of elbows, at least on the ground, that are that you would think are meant to cause damage other than cuts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. The cuts are the other reason I'd like to see them eliminated.
Yeah.
It's I hate to drop $40 on a pay per view.
Yeah.
And have the possibility of a main event being ended a minute in due to a cut from an elbow.
Yeah, and we almost had it with Florian Shirk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was obvious. It's obvious that Shirk was the superior fighter in that fight, and yet he could have lost on a cut, you know, essentially.
Yeah. And I actually thought the cut in the Shirk-Florian fight actually hurt Florian, too, because once the blood got in there, it was very hard for him to work any submission.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so I have mixed feelings with the elbows. I, you know, one part of me says you want to be able to use everything you can to, you know, inflict damage. But at the same time, you know, how much damage do elbows really cause most
yeah.
of the time? They're not, you know, they don't really, you don't really see guys get, you never see guys get knocked out by elbows.
No, you'll see some TKO finishes, but that's about all.
Stoppages on the ground, sure. But you almost never see standing elbows.
No, I'm trying to think. David Wise, Evan Tanner was the last time I saw them, you know, utilized well.
And there was also, did you ever catch that fight with Anderson Silva and Tony Frickland? I believe it was Tony Frickland. Maybe.
No, I've never seen that one.
Cage rage. Oh, it was the most insane thing I've ever seen. This backwards elbow that he threw. It was like he threw a punch. And it missed him, and so he came back with an elbow and knocked him out cold.
Mm.
Insane. But, you know, that's just Silva. He gets those strikes to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so elbows are gone. Soccer kicks are gone. What's in?
What's in? I definitely would like to see knees on the ground.
Yeah.
And I like those because they do damage, and you have to create space in order to throw them. So it will lead to more exciting fights.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also prevents the sloppy shoot for a takedown.
Yeah.
You got guys that shoot in and end up on their knees. They're gassed out. They got nothing left. And, you know, the opponent, all he can do is stand there and wait for him to get back up or, you know, knee him in the shoulder like Roger Huerta does.
Yeah.
So, you know, I agree with that definitely, to get knees back in on the ground. And I think that's something that's really being discussed a lot. It looks like Jersey is considering letting those back in, which would be kind of a good precedent to set.
Mm-hmm.
As I think Nevada doesn't follow too far, or follows pretty close to Jersey with that kind of thing.
Yeah. As far as submissions go, there are some submissions that are really dangerous and can be career-ending too.
Yeah.
That they should actually start taking a look into.
What kind of submissions are those?
Heel hooks are very dangerous.
Really?
Heel hook is a very good way to tear up someone's knee.
Interesting. See, I always heard that a heel hook was real painful, but never, but that it didn't really cause all that much damage.
Well, an Achilles lock will be painful and not cause very much damage.
Gotcha.
But a heel hook, there's a lot of twisting of the knee.
Yeah, yeah.
The injuries,
those are just ugly.
Yeah. The other one that's very dangerous that I haven't seen even tried in MMA before is a bicep slicer.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that, but I'm not sure what it is. What's the technique involved in that?
The bicep slicer is when you are trying to pull a straight arm bar on someone and they clasp the hands,
mm-hmm.
so you can't pull the arm bar.
Right.
What you can do is you can lock your hand so your wrist is on the person's bicep under their arms.
Yeah.
And basically bring your leg over and figure four your legs on top and use your weight to pull back and pull
like
the wrist
bicep,
against the bicep.
Basically.
It's been done in some jiu-jitsu tournaments and has led to some very serious injuries where it's actually torn ligaments and actually pulled the bicep up the person's arm.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's not pretty. Now, speaking of jiu-jitsu tournaments, or at least submission tournaments, we've got the Abu Dhabi Championships coming up this weekend. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, have you seen the Abu Dhabi Championships before?
I've seen the videos of them before.
Yeah.
And videos are really hard to watch. What they remind me a lot of is Thai boxing matches.
Right, right.
At least the early Abu Dhabi Championships, they had the wacky cultural music playing in the background, sort of like you see at a Thai boxing match.
Yeah. Kind of your blood sport music without the striking, huh?
Yeah. But the grappling there is world class. It's very exciting to watch.
Yeah, and we've got it streaming on Pro Elite this year, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Ricardo Arona has pulled out of the tournament, though.
Oh, he has?
Yes. Ricardo Arona is no longer fighting or grappling at the Abu Dhabi Championship. He
had a super fight scheduled with one of the Gracies, didn't he?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Roger Gracie.
Roger Gracie, right.
Yeah, and Dean Lister will be taking his place.
Oh, Dean Lister. Oh. See, Dean Lister in the UFC, you know, he seems to gas pretty quick. I'd be real interested to see what he does in a submission tournament. Whenever I picture him doing submissions, I see that triangle choke he put on Alessio Sakara, which
yeah.
was beautiful.
Yeah, it was perfect technique.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting fight to watch. Who would you have in that one?
I would have Dean Lister.
Yeah.
Yes, Dean Lister, in my opinion, is probably one of the top three in the world in submission grappling.
Wow.
And he will he'll compete up in weight and go against the top guys in higher weight classes, and he usually comes out on top.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. That's kind of part of the world that I haven't delved into yet is the submissions only part. That's real interesting. Now we did hit on a little bit of Krokop Gonzaga, and I know you've got some insight into that. A few of the things that you were noticing with Krokop's technique. Why don't you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, Krokop Gonzaga was an interesting fight to me because. Krokop has done the exact opposite of what I predicted whenever he got into UFC.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought he was going to tear people apart mostly with his footwork.
Yeah.
He has more surface area to work with, and I thought he was going to be utilizing some really cool angles and in order to hit his strikes. But so far, both against Eddie Sanchez and Gonzaga, his footwork has looked pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the Sanchez fight, I do remember thinking he's just kind of coming straight at him. You know, and I think that part of that had to do with the fact that Sanchez really had nothing for him.
Yeah.
You know, he's just he had nothing he could give Krokop, and he just kind of, you know, took that stance and just waited to land something.
Yeah, the Sanchez fight, it was just basically Krokop stalking him around the cage.
Yeah. And it almost looked like, you know, it looked like the opposite of Krokop Hunt.
Yeah, it really did.
When Hunt would stalk, I mean, he stalked in that whole fight, all, you know, through all the rounds, and you know, Krokop would land those left high kicks, and Hunt would just walk right through him, and he just stalked him around the ring the whole time, pretty much.
Yeah, I believe Krokop was really gassed during that fight.
Yeah, it seemed that way, because he was throwing everything he had, but nothing could hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was basically, he caught a few kicks to the head, and there was really nothing behind him.
Yeah, yeah. And so what kind of things did you see in the Gonzaga fight? Was it more, it seemed to me that Gonzaga had a real good game plan and followed it, you know, perfectly. Now, would you say that if Krokop was on his game, would it have been a different fight? Would we have seen the same outcome? What's your feelings on that?
I definitely think it would have been a different fight because Krokop made the mistake of throwing the roundhouse kick to the side.
Yeah.
And Gonzaga was moving away from him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to hit that kick when the person's coming into you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Gonzaga had a very good strategy of circling to the outside of Krokop's right leg, which, since he's a southpaw, is his lead leg.
Yeah.
So he was moving away from the power the whole fight.
Yeah.
It's not very often that you see Krokop get taken down after that roundhouse like that.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. And he just caught. I mean, the timing on the catch of that kick was just amazing. I mean, the fact that he caught it in the first place.
Yeah, it was. It shocked me.
Yeah, and you know, it dawned on me when he caught that, the look on Gonzaga's face. You know, really. I mean, you don't put a whole lot into that kind of thing, but the look on his face that he knew. You know, he knew that was the beginning of the end, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact that he could actually catch it and catch it that quick, that early in the fight. You know, that really, I think that kind of bolstered his confidence.
Yeah, Gonzaga looked really good on the ground, too.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
I questioned the stand-up. I sort of understand why it happened.
Yeah, yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask you about.
The fights earlier in the night were not very exciting.
Yeah.
And you had the bad fight with Arlovski against Verdum.
Mm-hmm. But well, there's really nothing he can do. You know, what's Dean going to do? Was he really going to take a point for, you know, not engaging? I mean, how do you even do that?
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Really haven't seen that happen very much, or at all. I can't recall any time where they've taken a point away for Spall.
Yeah. Now, at that point, I've never been a big fan of the yellow card. But in a fight like that, I think that could have been a kind of a motivator for those two.
Yeah, it definitely would have been a motivator. A better way to do it is maybe getting back to amateur wrestling and having passivity warnings, where you receive one warning and then you do get a point deducted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. In that fight, you know, Arlovski came in with a plan of I'm gonna throw him some leg kicks and then counter. And that's pretty much what he did, but he didn't seem to have a plan for if Verdum didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, he caught him after that one shot, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen worse fights, but
That's for sure. Now, did you happen to see the Gonzaga Kevin Jordan fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awful.
When it comes to bad fights, I think back to Dan Severn against Ken Shamrock.
Yeah, the second one. Oh, boy.
And you also have Chemo against Dan Severn at Pride 1.
Yeah. Yeah, there were definitely some horrible fights out there. And that, I mean, even when you look at what was your thoughts on Sanchez-Koscheck?
The Sanchez-Koscheck fight, that's really hard for me to judge because I always enjoy Josh Koscheck.
Yeah.
I've been a big fan of Koscheck, and I've enjoyed watching him wrestle in high school. And I remember seeing him wrestle at the Dapper Dan Classic in Pittsburgh, where they do the top wrestlers against the, from Pennsylvania against the top wrestlers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Koscheck pulled out a win there.
Yeah.
And he was also went to Edinburgh University, which is very close to Pittsburgh, and
yeah.
Was a great wrestler there, won an NCAA championship. So.
Right.
I enjoyed the fight,
yeah.
And that may have been because I had money on it, too, and like, a lot more exciting.
The enjoyment, sure. Yeah, to me, I mean, you know, you can't say anything bad about Koscheck's game plan because he went in there with it, he followed it, and it worked perfectly for him. You know, he walked out with the win. But at the same time, you know, you got to wonder what was Diego Sanchez's corner telling him after that second round? You know, that he was willing to go in and go for the shoot or, you know, wade through some punches or something.
Well, when you're going into the third round losing like that, you have to take some chances.
Yeah. But, it was a carbon copy of round one and two. So that's what really confused me, was not even as much Koscheck backing off, but Sanchez not doing anything to engage.
Well, it has came out since the fight that Sanchez has had surgery for a staph infection, which did occur less than a week after the fight. So he may not have been at 100%.
Interesting. Well, we'll certainly hear about that if there's a rematch in the future.
Yeah.
But now, to me, the ramifications of that fight, and I mentioned this in my lay of the land column for the welterweights, I don't think that did a whole lot. I mean, it did something for Koscheck, but I don't think it really put him into that top contender position, especially with how crowded that welterweight division is. I think he really needs another decisive win over a top competitor because, you know, yeah, he did beat Sanchez, but it wasn't really decisive.
No, it wasn't, and I still think he deserved the title shot a little more than Matt Hughes did.
Yeah.
Matt
yeah.
Hughes is the bigger name, and that's the reason why he got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You've also got the rivalry with him and Sarah.
Yeah, and that's another reason why they were so quick to make a fight.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think UFC is very enamored with Josh Koscheck.
Yeah, I agree.
And it may be not – I don't even think it is with the fact that Josh Koscheck is a boring fighter in a lot of people's opinion. I think it's a problem with his camp, the AKA.
Yeah.
Because John Fitch is a very exciting fighter.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's been on one main card.
Makes it on TV.
Yeah, been on one main card out of his – I think he's, 5-0 in the UFC?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they brought in his first fight in the UFC, they brought him in to be kind of a stepping stone for Brock Larson.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, you know, beat him for 3 rounds. Which Larson is 20-1, I should mention. He's fighting the WEC now. I think he's fighting for the welterweight title, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's him and Condit.
Yeah, I haven't been following WEC very much lately.
Well, it's tough to because you don't really have any coverage of them yet.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to being on TV.
Absolutely. I've heard great things about their cards.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll show some matches from the first show under Zuffa, and because I'm a big fan of seeing Kit Cope fight.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not a great mixed martial arts fighter, but his personality's just great.
Yeah, yeah. Good striker too. You know, if he gets the right matchup, he could be some trouble, but. You know, he just hasn't gotten that matchup yet.
The last time I went to a kickboxing match was actually to see Kit Cope fight a local guy.
Yeah.
And paid $50 for tickets. Kit Cope basically tore this guy apart. Rounds. But the guy's probably the best kickboxer in MMA.
Wow. And, we haven't really gotten to see that because he... He just gets taken to the ground and submit. I mean, Florian just made quick work of him.
Yeah, he really has to work on his takedown defense.
Yeah, yeah, and you know he's kind of the kind of another version of Czech Congo. I mean, Congo. If Congo had any kind of takedown defense, he'd be a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's got devastating power, but he just these guys. I mean, Carmelo Marrero, who was vastly undersized in their fight, just took him down at will, and you know,
yeah.
And Congo had no answer for it.
The Carmelo Marrero fight, you know, he came in there with a perfect game plan.
Yeah,
take the guy down, hold him there.
Absolutely,
okay,
it was the Jake O'Brien school.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it worked. And I think Marrero, by the way, he just fought, you know, who after he lost to Gonzaga, I believe he's dropping down. He's fighting Wilson Gouveia, light heavyweight.
Yeah, that's is that going to be at the Ireland show?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I don't see Marrero beating Gouveia.
I don't either.
Yeah, I just don't think he has it in him. There's still a lot of work he has to do.
Yeah, he seems like a light version of Rashad Evans when Evans first came off of the Tough Show. You know, Rashad could hold guys down, but he delivered a little bit of punishment. Marrero doesn't seem to really have that ability. At least,
yeah, his striking so far has been pretty pitiful. He's basically a lay and pray guy.
Yeah,
he's got
yeah.
good takedowns though.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about some hype for fights. Now we've got two big ones coming up with probably the two biggest stars in MMA, or at least two of the biggest stars. Chuck Liddell fighting Rampage Jackson and Tito Ortiz fighting Rashad Evans. So now we've got UFC 71, which is Liddell Jackson, coming up on the 26th. We haven't really seen a whole lot of hype for that fight yet.
No, we haven't. And
yeah.
I think the main issue is the fact that the Inside the UFC show is sort of on hiatus right now. And,
yeah.
In fact, I really don't see it coming back.
Yeah, and to me that's a shame because Inside the UFC, at least the format of the show, seems like the perfect way to be able to hype a fight. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you got unfortunately they put it on at midnight and 1 o'clock, which you know does nothing for anybody, because what you want to do with that kind of show is attract the casual viewer, and the casual viewer is not going to be staying up until 12, 1 o'clock to watch basically an MMA talk show.
Yeah, the format of the show though was great, and
yeah.
Especially leading up to UFC 67, they had a lot of new fighters coming in, and Krokop and Jackson.
Yeah,
they did a very good job getting the mainstream audience to recognize them.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, you know, Liddell Jackson is a huge money fight if they do it right. If they do, I can see him doing an all access with Jackson, which should be really entertaining.
Yeah, I would really like to see that.
Yeah, and at least I would hope they would do that. You know, they did one with Babalu, which, while interesting, would probably not hold a candle to Rampage.
Yeah, the Babalu one, that was my favorite of the all-access shows.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is they did a very good job of making people think that Babalu had a chance of winning.
Oh, absolutely.
When just looking at his style,
yeah,
it was a really bad matchup for him.
Yeah, boy, what that was a heck of a confusing fight for me. I saw him come out and charge Liddell, and I'm thinking, what is he doing?
Yeah, the guy just has no stand up.
Yeah, none. And you know, fighting Chuck Liddell, you can have all the takedowns you want, but you got to have at least something on the feet, because man, I mean, he just got and Liddell barely even had to try. You know, knocked him out going backwards.
Yeah, and Babalu looked bad in his last fight, too.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, Jason Lambert, what a recovery he made after getting pounded out by Rashad Evans, huh?
Yeah, and I attended UFC 68 Live, and, you know, just watching Babalu's footwork, watching him move around the octagon, he's very slow.
Yeah. So how was now you were in Columbus for UFC 68, like you said. Have you ever been to an event in Vegas?
I've never been to a UFC event in Vegas. I was at one in Atlantic City.
Okay. Now how would you compare the atmosphere? Now obviously Atlantic City, that was probably a while ago, right?
Yeah. That was I believe 2001.
Okay. So that was the one that was probably right before or right after Ziffa bought the company, right?
Yes. I believe it was right before, because it was, I think Tito against Elvis in a second to me.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Now, the atmosphere in Columbus, how was – I've heard great things about the live show. Was that – did it live up to what it sounded like?
The atmosphere in Columbus was good, especially for Couture against Sylvia.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Some of the undercard fights, you could tell the crowd really wasn't into it.
Right.
And they would boo during the undercard fights whenever it went to the ground.
Yeah.
Which I fully understand at a live show.
Yeah, right.
Because that's when you have to start watching the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, have you ever been to a show with a ring?
I've never been to a show with a ring.
Okay. Because it kind of makes me wonder. I've not been to either one, actually. You know, which of those fights plays better live, whether it's in a cage or in a ring. You know, obviously the cage you have a little bit of trouble seeing, but you can. I mean, in your experience, how was that?
The cage wasn't bad to see.
Yeah.
Okay. You can see the stand up perfectly. Okay, and these were from club level seats, so they were a little bit off before.
Yeah.
The groundwork, it's a little hard to see when it comes near you.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's hard to pick up the nuances.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking the intricacies of the game, I'm sure, is very difficult unless you're looking at the screen.
Yeah, the Glenn Santibow against, I believe it was Jason Dent fight.
Yeah.
The crowd was just all over that one.
Yeah, I can imagine that. No.
But the other interesting thing was Martin Kampman and Drew McFedries had a great fight.
Oh, I'll tell you what, man. Kampman, I think a lot of people were going to underestimate him against Franklin, but Kampman's got game.
Yeah. The problem is no one knows who the guy is.
Yeah, absolutely true.
It was hilarious. We were at the Arnold earlier in the day watching the MAGA tournament.
Yeah.
And Randy Couture and Martin Kampman had a table together.
Really?
And there was one guy that went up to buy a Martin Kampman T-shirt and did not recognize Martin Kampman.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, it's... Watching him when he fought Talas Lytus, which was an undercard fight on one of the Ultimate Fight Nights, he just put a hurting on Lytus, and Lytus was undefeated at the time.
Yeah,
just pummeled him for three straight rounds, and the way he was able to just to transition into the arm choke for McFedries.
Yeah, he is. He's one of those fighters that he looked great on his feet against. Latest, but he didn't look that great against McFedries.
Yeah, yeah.
He had an arm choke just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it did. I mean, he just snapped it on. And, you know, McFedries, he's got some heavy hands, but, Kampman withstood him. McFedries is a guy that knocked out Alessio Sicara at 205. You know, so Kampman can take a hit. I think it'll be real interesting to see what he does against Franklin. I mean, you know, Franklin's a big middleweight, but Kampman's a tough dude.
Yeah, Kampman's also a small middleweight. I think he would be a lot better off coming down to welterweight.
Yeah. Oh, he'd be a beast at 170. But yeah. So anyway, we're talking about these hyped fights. We got Rashad Evans, Tito Ortiz at UFC 73, which looks like it's going to be an insane card. We've got on that same card, you've got. Marquardt Silva and Sean Cherky against Hermes Franca, and they're also bringing back Jeff Joslin to fight Chris Lytle, which Jeff Joslin, I'd really like to see what he can do against someone other than a primary grappler. You know, Chris Lytle just makes people look bad, even though he doesn't always win, but you never look good when you fight Chris Lytle.
No, you don't. Matt, you can't look good fighting Chris Lytle.
Yeah. Yeah, and they brought Joslin in, and he fought Koscheck. Gave him all he could handle for three rounds, but just the grappling was too much for him. I'd really like to see what he can do. I'd like to see a rematch between him and John Fitch. He and Fitch put on a heck of a show when they fought. And
I've never seen that fight, but in the fight with Koscheck, I actually fought Joslin in the first round.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Johnson's a tough guy. I'd just like to see what he can, what he could do with a little bit more favorable matchup. But anyway, on that same card, we've got Evans Ortiz, and the trash talk is already going. I think this is going to be a huge money fight for the UFC.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge money fight unless Ortiz's comments just start to turn people off.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And with him using the Don Imus quote referred to Rashad Evans, it may just do that.
Yeah. You know, I think what helps that, though, is the way that Evans responds to it, because he just kind of brushes it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Evans, he's a class act.
Yeah, absolutely.
Many people don't know this, but Rashad Evans was in amateur wrestling. He wrestled for Michigan State University, and he pulled off one of the bigger upsets in NCAA history when he ended up beating Greg Jones from West Virginia, which Jones was, you know, one of the highly touted wrestlers that, you know, people thought at one time could go undefeated his whole college career.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it should be, I mean, and the way his striking has developed, I mean, that knockout of Sean Salmon, that was just brutal.
Yeah, that was a scary kick.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's almost like a Nate Quarry type knockout, which I believe Quarry is actually on the comeback trail, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. The last I've heard was he was considering retirement.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see him back.
What's that?
I'd like to see him back.
I would, too. I think the last I heard, he had gotten, I believe he needed surgery on his spine or something to that effect, and he was actually working his way back, which it'd be real interesting to see him again. You know,
that's great.
A real interesting story behind how he's gotten to where he's gotten. But I think
I've always found him interesting because they had a bunch of immature guys on the first Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
Except for Nate. He seemed to be the only one that was actually sane in there.
Yeah, which is, you know, kind of explains why they kept him on as a coach after he got injured. Kind of an interesting dynamic there.
Yeah, we really don't have that this year.
No, not at all. You know, and I think it's a shame because, you know, the lightweights, I mean, it's such an exciting division. But I think the format here just really isn't fitting the action that could be showcased with these guys.
I think one of the problems is that this is the first time a lot of guys are fighting on this big of a scale, and they're very tentative.
Yeah.
And when you have two fighters going out there and both fighting not to lose, you don't get very exciting fights.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it looks like we're coming up on about an hour. I guess we'll cut it off right about there. Do you have any parting shots you want to throw out?
Just like to mention, if anyone is in the Youngstown area, in Youngstown, Ohio, there's an IFBL show this weekend. And one of my good friends, John Ofer, is going to be having his first mixed martial arts match. So if you're in the area, check it out.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to the first MMA Torchcast. It was our first time. So go easy on us in the forums, but we will be back. I will be back next week with Jerry Cataline, I believe. So tune in then, and thanks again for listening, and we will see you later. Thanks.